Welcome to the Court Report, a special post-reunions edition. Jerry Price here with Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Manghart. And coach, welcome.
I'm so glad to be back.
So we got a lot to talk about. You were just talking about all the things we want to talk about here. And before we talk about that, let's start with J.R. Smith.
Okay.
And I know you have been following the NBA playoffs. I know your Celtics lost.
Yeah.
But the situation that he was in Game 1, where obviously everybody knows it was 107-107, but he thought they were ahead, so he got the ball and dribbled out the clock. What do you take away from that when you watch something like that as a coach? Like, where does the blame for that go? Is it simply on him to know that his team is ahead, or there are, like, four assistant coaches who are supposed to be telling everybody the situation? And do you think things like that have ever happened in your experience with your teams?
You know, I would say that the onus is definitely on J.R. Smith. First of all, they're at the free throw line, so it's a non-mobile clock, right? The clock is stationary, and you get, you know, about 8 seconds between free throws. So you got a lot of time to do nothing but stare at the scoreboard. And in your head, you're, you know, out of a timeout, of course, your assistants are, and your head coaches are sharing this scenario. But, I mean, free throw is a second free throw. So it depends on how the first one went, and then the second one goes to whether you're up one, down one, up two, down two. So the lack of focus is really disappointing. You know, I'm a Celtics fan, but, you know, LeBron James has continually handled himself with such class as a competitor and what he's done on the floor. And for him to have to sort of manage through that, I feel terrible for him.
It's a lot for him. I mean, he put up 51 points in that game and it still wasn't enough. But, like, just to see a one player who can carry a team that way is extraordinary. But what do you take away from, like, the NBA playoffs that you think maybe helps you as you move forward? Anything? Or you just watch it as a fan? Or do you see the NBA teams doing something and think to yourself that might work here? And one thing I have to say about the NBA, it's become a three-point shooting contest. Mm-hmm. That's basically all it is.
And ball screens, yeah. I think I still take away a lot. It's the highest level game. Their situational time and scores are noteworthy game after game. Also, they're, you know, Brad Stevens is running really simple sort of read and react stuff that I really like, and we have a few Celtics quicks in our package. And then when you look at a team like Golden State, sure, you've got, you know, Steph and Clay who are so gifted, but I look at, like, someone like a Draymond Green.
You didn't even mention Kevin Durant.
I know, right? I haven't gotten there yet. You have, like, our Lessie Robinson being Draymond Green, but you see how that team is well put together. You know, and so, of course, I take that as I'm in my recruiting season right now of really figuring out what pieces are going to make us better as opposed to just the system. So I love the NBA. I think you know that. Highest level basketball, and I'll be very sad when it's over.
So let's talk about all the things going on with your team now. Mm-hmm. I'll give you three different places you pick where you want to start.
Okay.
The reunions piece, the coaching staff personnel pieces, yep. Or the incoming recruits piece?
Oh, my gosh. They're all such exciting pieces. Let's first start with our staff. You know, they're the ones closest to me. And, you know, everyone knows, you know, that Milena Flores, my longtime assistant, you wrote a really great piece on her, is entering a different profession and finding a different journey, leaving college basketball, at least for the time being. And she's been such a part of our legacy. And, you know, her and I, it's going to be hard to find two people more different than one another, yet who complement each other with such integrity and respect, and also who care more about the program than we do. So, you know, you don't replace someone like Milena, but you're just in infinite gratitude and respect, and grateful that she took a chance with me, and look what we've built, and forever this is ours.
What are some of the things that you would say about Milena that people don't realize the amount of, your record is 200 and something and less than 100. Her record is 0-0.
Yeah. I think that what people know is kind of the egoless worker. But what people, I think sometimes, especially in our business, you know, how gregarious and outgoing you are somehow relates to what you know and how engaging you are to people in your program. And Milena is never the loudest in the room and prefers sort of to be, I think, the number two and prefers to be in the backseat a little bit. And that girl is so loyal. She's incredibly loyal. And anyone in our organization, players, coaches, athletic department, they don't just like her, they love her. And so her ability to connect with people, even though maybe the outside recruit, the outside parent might sort of say, hey, Milena's hard to get to know, and she's not. She'll do anything for you.
And so you have found a replacement for her.
I have found a replacement. Yeah, not a replacement. I've just found a good fit in that.
Now, one thing I would say about Milena is, before we get on to her replacement, is, one thing I would say about Milena, she came here when you came here, really, like you, not a ton of experience coaching, and you guys built this thing together, and if you watch Milena on game nights, she's so focused and competitive,
no doubt.
But the other thing, it's really hard to sit there the head coach is allowed to get up and walk around. The assistant coach isn't allowed to get up and walk around. Yeah. And it's really hard. I mean, the one thing I noticed about her is really hard for her just to sit there.
Yes.
Let it all happen around her.
Yes. And her basketball knowledge. I mean, I can guarantee that I can look at her during a game and say, hey, what's their next baseline out of bounds? You know, are we man or zone based on that? Because I can decide if we're man or zone. She knows what the other team's doing better than they do. She's really been a great film resource and just a great basketball. You know, it's fun for us to talk basketball together.
But she's also super competitive.
I mean, it's funny. Carrie Moore, my recruiting coordinator on my staff, which was fantastic. She said to a recruit the other day, I heard her, and she said, you know, I'm so competitive until I came here. And, you know, gosh, Courtney and Milana make me look soft. You know, so, yeah, we are pretty competitive, and we've always kind of found real camaraderie in that.
So we're going to miss her. I'll miss her. You know, she's like, she's also, you know, she's just somebody who's like just a lot of fun to be around and somebody who, you know, is very engaged in what's going on in the department, not just women's basketball and is a big fan of a lot of the teams and, you know, funny and likes all the right movies and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, she's a Jeopardy champ, man. And now I'm losing a good Jeopardy person. Maybe I'll get smarter because of that.
So her replacement is Addie Messier, who, I didn't realize this. She's the first Princeton woman ever to be the Ivy League Player of the Year. I thought somebody,
what? And unanimous.
I thought somebody like in the 80s or 90s might have been the Player of the Year, but it turned out that Addie was the first, and she's been at Dartmouth, and now she's coming back here. So talk a little bit about her.
You know, I had.
And I don't want to interrupt you, but like I imagine you didn't really have to make a second phone call. I mean,
exactly. Well, her references, I think, were like Gary Walters and me, you know, so. You know, and her former college coach, who's my, you know, coach at my alma mater. Yeah, you know, Addie was, she just finished her master's up there in the same program I had done when I was an assistant up there. And she was looking for the new growth opportunity. So I was actually engaged with her, helping her kind of find other opportunities in our business. And luckily, I think within 2 days, she was going to take a different job. And fortunately, Milena had made the decision at a time that helped me because it allowed me to call Addie and say, it's time to come home. And someone who's had such an illustrious playing career. She's a champion. She's a captain. She's a Player of the Year. She played for me, so she knows how I operate, and she knows kind of what it feels like to play for me. And she loves Princeton, Jerry. I mean, this place is like, as every Princeton alum does. I mean, she just thinks this place is like the only place. And to have that on your staff and recruiting, it's kind of like Milena. Milena had such respect and love for this place and adoration. And I get that back, you know, in someone who also has that same love, respect, and adoration for me.
Yeah, you can see that in some of her social media, how much she loves Princeton.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of an interesting dynamic to go from your alma mater to another league school and then back to here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's clear that she's back here. Not that I'm not saying she didn't give Dartmouth her full effort, obviously, but like, you know, it's clear she's back in a place that she wants to be. And
no
I'm not
doubt.
Saying, again, I'm not saying she didn't want to be at Dartmouth. I'm saying
no, for sure. But this is her home, and when I talked to her coach at the time, she said that. And you know, when I interviewed Carrie for this position of the recruiting coordinator 2 years ago, I actually never interviewed Addie, and I'm sure there were many alums who sort of thought, wait, what about Addie? And you know, she wasn't finished with her master's yet, and. It felt to me like, you know, this is the right time right now. I feel like our program's ready. She was on our first NCAA tournament team, and I'd like her to be on our staff for our first Sweet 16. So it's just the right time.
So Milena, not the only one leaving the staff. Megan Williams, the operations director, has also left. Just talk a little bit about Megan.
Oh, my gosh. Megan Williams is like my right hand, my left hand, my front, my back. You know, managing our program, the operations side is everything. You know, we're understaffed and we try to do everything really well. So not only the stuff that I do for the university in a speaking engagement way, our program, our travel, our gear, our marketing, our interfacing, our alumni mentor network, she deals with all of it because she's a pro. She's a total stud. And so the more that, you know, you always say, if you want something done, ask a busy person. And she's busy and she's capable and she's talented. And, you know, her
That's
goal,
good. I never heard that before.
Yeah, that's how you do it, right? So she said, I remember when she took the job after her first eval, you know, kind of assessed performance at the end of the first year. And she said, I really want to know by the end of the second year if I want to go into coaching or if I want to go into administration. That's my goal this year. And I took that to take... We took that to heart, and we got her involved in some administrative things for the department. And then, of course, she was involved with some basketball things. And by about January, she said, I really want to be an AD someday. I want to get my PhD. And boy, we tried to keep her here because she is a stud. I mean, that kid's a big time, you know, and someday maybe she'll hire me.
And then that's not even those two aren't the only turnover on the coaching staff.
Yeah, we have, so Caitlin Crescenzia, who is our restricted earnings slash volunteer spot, that position has a ton of mobility because you're not able to pay them and give them benefits or anything like that. So it's really a learning position. And she went on as the recruiting coordinator at Mercer, which was an NCAA tournament team last year. Shows the respect people have for our program that, you know, right before her, Chessie Jackson became the head coach TCNJ and from my volunteer spot and was the coach of the year for the East. Eastern region this year. So, you know, being on our staff, it's, as I just said to the new people that we're hiring, is you're learning from me and you're part of my network. And that's a very small part of what you're getting. You're getting the very best committed student athletes in the country, but you're also getting a staff of superstars that you're going to learn from.
So a lot of challenges there to replace those two. Yeah. And, you know, to blend a whole new chemistry together among the coaches. Mm-hmm. And just, I'm assuming that's something that is important and that doesn't happen accidentally.
No, it's very intentional. And I got a lot of people at reunions today, this weekend, talking about how much as they've gotten older, they appreciate the intentionality which I lead. But I give a lot of respect to Carrie Moore, who's, you know, for a while here, we wanted to give Meg and Milena their kind of month swan song. They deserve it. And so we really have been understaffed here for a month, just the two of us. And her and I have just kind of tied up our shoes and said, we got this. And she'll make sure that our transition goes as smoothly as I will. And that's what we're good at. You know, we have our own starting five, you know, and now it's our job to show the team how to come together.
So before any of that happened, we announced the incoming class of 2022.
Yeah, man.
What do you want to take us through those?
Oh, man, it's going to be so hard because I had such excitement for them. We've been recruiting them for a long time. These are some really good players. I'll start with both Grace Stone from Long Island and Julie Cunningham from New Jersey. And New Jersey kids, exciting, of course. We don't get those very often. But
from Watchung.
Watchung Hills. Those two kids were at my Tiger Camp, which is my middle school camp. And they were good back then. And I said, kind of in jest, but also hopeful, that said to them and their parents, hey, someday come back and be a Tiger.
Have you ever had anybody else?
No. I'm not old enough, Jerry. But so they were so young, and I think they were in sixth grade, and I had them play with the eighth graders. And you know, they are high major, you know, Big Ten type talent. So the fact that we got in on them real early, I think, helped. And then we've got, Nina Young from Northern California area. She's a lot like Annie Taraction in that she's a stud. She can really shoot the ball. She's got a great physical body. She can handle. She can rebound. She plays at a very high level. She was a very heavily recruited recruit as well, and just got so grateful to have her trust and her. She's just a great kid too. I think her family is fantastic. So you got those guys. Then you have a kid who's actually taller and skinnier than Bella, if you can imagine. You've got Kira Enspo, who's an identical twin. Her identical twin is going to Yale to play, so that'll be a fun battle for them.
You ever have memory of something like that?
Twins playing at two different league schools? No, they'll be tipping against each other too. So, no, I don't know that. And they didn't want to play together. We probably would have gotten them both. But Kira's like a lot like Bella. She doesn't shoot it like Bella, but she's long and lean like that. Can run and can jump. And, we expect her to help us right away. And then we've got an incoming point guard, a little lefty, who's built like me, so she's going to need some physicality work. But Maggie was the Delaware Player of the Year, and you know, is her parents went to Dartmouth, or her mom went to Dartmouth, so I've been kind of knowing about her for a while. Just a very high basketball IQ point guard.
So not going to dribble the clock out in a tie game.
She's not going to get the offensive rebound either, but yes. And then the last one would be, not last, but you know, certainly not least, is Lexi Weaker, who's at Episcopal High School, where I actually used to be the girls' athletic director and coach. She's about 6'3", a guard, lefty, very skilled. So she's kind of more of that the typical Princeton kind of pinch post who can move the ball well and has three-point range. And so I think all six of them, Jerry, are have a real chance, and they know it, to help us.
Is that – like when do you start? How do you start to try to – I assume you've already done this a million times over in your mind, but to figure out how their skills and personalities blend on a team that returns – so much, mm-hmm. and on a team that loses a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're bringing in six, you lose three.
Yeah. Well, they've been given our summer manual, so they've got their lifting, they've got their skill workouts. They'll all come to work camps, so I'll be able to really get my hands and eyes on them. I know who they are as players, and I know who they are as people. I don't know who they are as Princeton Tigers yet. And that challenge, I talk about with them all the time. That, you know, those of you, Carly Littlefield is a great example. She was ready to go. And so I connected her on the same chat thread with those six freshmen, and Carly sent, of course, the most well-written, most thoughtful text about, like, you can come in ready. It's possible. And so, you know, I think it's understanding that you're talented enough. And there's one thing I do well with a recruit. Like, I know they can play. It's a matter of, are they going to be ready right away? And if they are, we'll be really good. And if they're not, we'll struggle out.
I mean, you got a lot of pieces, though. I mean, you got
yeah, we
kids.
Can play a lot of different ways. We could play small. We could play big. Bella's unfair because she lets you play both. Or not small, but she lets you be your center. She can be your two guard. But I can envision a ton of different lineups. And so it allows us to think about ways that you know, we got to sit down and really decide, you know, how we got to keep it simple, because I think they're going to help us early. So we can't have all these, can't be too complicated early, because I think, like I said, I think they'll be in early.
Now, you didn't play too many starting lineups this last year. And,
no.
You know,
no.
It's the best teams are the ones, I think, that don't have to start experimenting with starting lineups as much. And,
yep.
You know,
yeah,
you got a lot of a lot of pieces you could put into a starting
lineup.
We do.
So by November, hopefully that's clear. And then I would have thought maybe Abby Myers would have moved into the starting lineup midway through the season, but didn't quite. Then Kalea got healthy, and Kalea was more game ready, I think, and in that starting role, and Abby was more ready to come in off the bench and didn't have to wear the pressure. So I think in a way, I always say that they determine who starts. You know, I use film and practice and staff to figure that out. So
I like Bella's chances.
I like Bella's chances. I like Carly's chances. I think those guys are sort of ready to have some guys follow them.
So let's segue to reunions.
Oh, the best.
So, you know, your alumni group is a pretty special one. I understand you're the coach at Princeton.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Penn, and there's nothing there that remotely touches what goes on here at reunions. Right. So I think Princeton people have a tendency to take it for granted a bit. You know, they just assume everybody does this, but if they don't,
yeah.
I mean, it's a really unique thing to Princeton. And do you know who Joe Schein is?
Mm-mm.
Joe Schein is the guy from the class of 37.
Oh, I saw him walk down the P-Rate.
He
I
led the
P-Rate.
Right?
Yeah,
it
cool.
It was his 81st reunion. He's 103 years old. He's just strolling
down. He looks pretty mobile for 103.
103, yeah.
Wow.
So, but, you know, no women
right.
in the 1930s,
yep.
So no women.
They were
know.
Not, they were there for a while, yeah.
Right, but still, I mean, one thing that's interesting about that is because women weren't here until 1970, there's no women in the P-Rate until you get, like, a pretty.
Way into it.
Right.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, thought about that.
But, your alumni group is a fiercely loyal one,
no doubt. It's
a fun one, and they really, you could tell, love each other, and you could tell they love to get together with each other, and you can see it just when you see them, or you can just see that even if you just see the posts on social media, but just talk a little bit about what it was like to have them back, and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it almost brings tears to my eyes, and I'm not a very emotional person about this stuff, but, you know, I was watching the alumni game on Saturday morning, and you look out and you say, every single one of you, you know, for the most part, has won mostly two Ivy championships. It's crazy, right? So it's not only that they're back, but they're such winners, and that they're back, and there's fleet upon fleet of people that are coming back to play basketball because it's what they love to do together. And then how good they are to the new guys, so that our current team is working the reunions. They stop by at the barbecue. You know, our dean of admission stops by, and our athletic director stops by. And how, even if Molly wasn't the AD when they were here, they want everyone to feel welcome in our community. And I hope that I've helped them understand the value of that. I don't have to teach them how to do that anymore. I mean, they are grateful for anybody who takes any time to care about the program that they built and that they care about. And we had some alum from 1978. And I said, gosh, I'm so glad you're back. I've never met you. And she said, I just love watching those games. I am so proud of this product. And so I think the level has been well spoken for, but to what you've said, I think is so right. It's hard to put into words the genuine camaraderie and chemistry that this program's about.
And one thing that's interesting to me is when you watch it, it's not, okay, well, these are all the people who played on one team talking to each other, and then these are the people
totally.
On another team.
Yeah. Even our alumni game, Jerry, our odds play against the evens every year. So that it's not old guys, young guys. It's if you graduate an odd year, you're on one team, and an even year, the other team.
I like
get
that.
A shirt. You know, so it just makes it kind of easier there. And then I remember what they find silly, and I hopefully makes sense here, is that they say, I'll say, oh, Annie, you played with, you know, Cheryl? And oh my gosh, I didn't know that. And they're like, Coach, come on, as if I should know that. But they treat everybody so well, to your point, that I assume they all play with each other, you know?
For some reason, I am much better at remembering what year people graduated when I look at people from the 70s or 80s or 90s. Than I am for the last, like, 5 to 10 years. Like, to me, that's all a blur of who, like, graduated when. So it's really hard for me to remember that, like, Yeah.
It's Naveen. It was that class who won four titles. It's their 5 year.
Right. That's unbelievable.
And I'm supposed
to
remember who they played with. It's like you act like you played with Bella.
That's also been 5 years. That's like.
And it's so, I mean, they're wearing their four Ivy Championship rings. And I'm like, you guys don't wear these stuff often, I hope, out. And they were like, Coach, we earned it. I'm like, no, you should. But yeah, as I posted for those that are following, you know, I posted, this is my why. And this business is challenging. And it's all inclusive and it's all intensive. And to be able to sit back at the barbecue or at the alumni game or at the parade and just be like, you know, you're my people. It gives me motivation for the year ahead.
And so one more thing, tomorrow is graduation.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
The worst?
It's the worst because you come to love these people so much. You know, if I think about who Kenya, Tia, and Leslie, and then our two managers were on the way in, and then what they're leaving now, and I'm so excited for them, but you come to love them. And so at 2 o'clock tomorrow, I say bye to them and their families, and I'll see them at reunions. You know, it's hard.
Yes.
But good for them.
One thing I would say is, you know, if you're graduating from college, any college, Princeton or any college you want to talk about, who are you now compared to who you were when you got here? And, you know, in your case, you mentioned that you recruited these kids a long time. And
mm-hmm.
So you really, it's not like they just showed up on the first day and you were the, you were a professor who met them or, you know, somebody in the administration who just met somebody. Like, you have a lot of invested in these people before they ever get here. But you see what happens to them from the time you meet them to the first day they get here and their eyes are all wide and they don't know what to do. And, you know, now who they are as they graduate.
Yeah.
And I have to think that's a pretty fascinating dynamic.
It's fascinating. We almost didn't get Leslie Robinson. Everyone thinks, well, of course you got Leslie. Her dad played here and her aunt went here. We almost didn't get her because she didn't want to follow in her dad's. She didn't want to have to live in her dad's legacy. And she was literally deathly afraid of getting a B. She'd never gotten a B. She went to Corvallis High School where the president, current president, Eisgruber went. And I was like, hey, babe, you're going to get a B, maybe even worse, right? And your dad's legacy, well, then smash it. You know, that's just kind of how I operate, as you know. And, you know, I give Craig has become a very good friend of mine. And I'm just like, did that kid walk her own walk? She walked her own walk, you know. And did she get some Bs? Hell yeah. And she's proud of those Bs, you know. And so, yeah, that's just one such example. Kenya was, you know, she was much more reserved and had just sort of felt like she needed to find her place before she could let her layers kind of peel off her own layers. And she's now a self-assured, confident, beautiful soul that is shining, right? And then you've got Tia, who was a worker and just put her head down and like, I'll just do what I'm told. And now she's a thinker. She thinks about where she might have the most impact. And she's still that reliable worker, but she's really just blossomed. And I look at those kids and I'm like, you're now women that are going to make our world better.
Do you know what their next steps are?
Tia's going to play professionally overseas. Leslie also is going to play professional basketball. And Kenya's doing a Project 55 in New York City, which is a university-run program that helps sort of serve the underprivileged.
And that's a lot. You said we had a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's 23 minutes already.
Yeah, well, we I'm sorry that
we didn't even have a game to talk about.
I know. It's going on and on, but there was a lot, as you said, that was going on, and it's good to honor it.
Yeah, and I think it's good. This is a good time to talk. We've been trying to get together for the last week or so, and I think that waiting till after reunions was pretty good and to see the staff turnover. So, again, you know, everybody's going to miss the
people. What do you have going on right now?
What do I have going on right now?
Yeah. You have some clothes up for the year, or are you now already shifted gears to moving our page to the next year?
Honestly, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Our summer project is, if you were starting athletic communications from scratch, what would you do? Because a lot of what goes into athletic communications has roots in things that date back before there was a web page and it was all media relations oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, what would you do if nobody had ever thought to have sports publicity offices and somebody said, hey, you know what we should do? We should publicize our teams. How do you want to go about doing that? And I think that given the resources we have in this office, in social media, in video production, you know, I want to have some conversations and some conversations with coaches too about, you know, what do we do that has no value, and what could we do in its place? And some of it's going to be tough because you have to let go of some things that people have, like, clung to. And some of it's tough because
they're... It's a leap of faith, right? It's an industry that they... Maybe our viewers can help. Like, that's a... The more feedback we can get on how to share this special experience, the better.
Yeah, I mean, like, the podcasts themselves. I mean, when you... I don't know how big into analytics you are. When you look at the analytics of what you do and what is successful, it often contradicts what you would guess. So what are you willing to do with that information? And, you know, it's a challenge because you need to you need, we serve a lot of different audiences.
That's the thing. See, I don't have to worry about all that. It's just so true.
What I always say is, like, you know, we have three, our three core areas that we're trying to appeal to are
recruits.
One is recruits. Two is athletes who are here to give them the best possible experience that they can have. And that encompasses their parents and friends and all those kinds of things. And then it's the people who are here before. And we want to keep them engaged with the program and supporting the program and, mm-hmm. and you know, wanting to, you know, fondly remember their time here, but also be part of, you know, like the woman from 1978. You know, we want to keep her engaged in the current team.
Yep.
However, the woman from 1978, who's a few years older than I am, doesn't view things through the same lens as the kid you're recruiting. They don't use the same platforms. They don't, mm-hmm. you know, they don't communicate the same ways. So we have to keep those things
in mind. Although she was teaching me how to airdrop photos. So she's actually, she might be on your social media sites.
So there, that's the shortish version of what we're going to spend the summer doing. And, you know, the thing is it's hard to take things away. You know, everybody wants what they had. And we saw this when we stopped doing media guides a while ago. And like people were really like, no, you got to do media guides. You got to keep doing media guides. And now I'm like, you know, why in the world did we do media guides as long as we did?
They take time. That's the thing. Yeah. No, I think that even more, unless you're doing the 10 for 10, I mean, the way that your office is willing to be innovative, you would know through your analytics how successful they are. But as someone who's been a part of the department for 11 years and I see how much recruiting has changed in terms of how we access and how they access information, I'm very confident that, you know, the direction that we go is one I won't necessarily understand, but it will be reached.
Well, I also think you have to be able to, like, you know, you have to see the big picture a little bit, and that's not always, you know, easy to do, and then you have to make decisions from based on that. So, for instance, you know, Warren's 10 for 10 series was great. I mean, I think that reached a lot of people. These podcasts by themselves. I mean, I'm surprised how many people have listened to them. I didn't think we'd have as much traction as we've had, and we're really running long here, but I think it's okay because it's the summer. Yeah. But this is a way to reach people.
This is
a way to hear directly from
you. That's the thing, is it brings voices. It brings, like, for so many, except for my players, I'm on the sideline. And that's what we tried to do in terms of our fan base, too. Like, you want to bring the people to them, right? And I'm very accessible. I don't know all these constituents, right? So what I've loved is allowed me to, through our interaction and our rapport, we've been able to hopefully bring me to color a little bit and life. So the program, therefore, feels more familiar.
And what surprised me is, you know, I was at reunions. I went to the lacrosse friends group. You know, they had a luncheon or whatever you want to call it from 11 to 1. And I'm talking to, like, a bunch of people, and they're like, you know, so we do the podcast with Matt Madelon and Chris Saylor. And they were like, oh, I love the podcast. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, I really love the Courtney Banghart one. Like more than one person from lacrosse, so it has no connection with this basketball. Oh, I love the Courtney Banghart one. And, you know, so I think this is a way to get to people. And the other thing is the in-game highlights that we do on social media.
Yes.
And the stuff that, you know, I don't know if you saw the hockey videos that John Bullis did when they were at the ECAC championships where Ron Fogarty was mic'd up and he was in the locker room and he was on the bench. And
totally.
That really puts people
big time,
right into what's going on.
No doubt. You
know, I mean, that's what people want.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they don't want, you know,
statistics and stuff.
Yeah. Right. And this really long, incredibly well-written post-game story. And
I agree.
And the reality of the situation, the blog I write, more people read the blog I write every day than read 95% of the stories on our webpage.
Right,
and
I'm sure.
Yeah, but what do you want to do with that information? Like, how do you make decisions based on that? And
yeah.
Like, you know, so we're going down the path, and we'll try some stuff out.
Viewers, come on. Email in. How we can make this a better system for you guys.
We'll be like Leslie Robinson. We'll get some B's and lower along the way, but some we'll hopefully get some
A's,
too.
Maybe even a C. There's some out there that are listening that got some C's, and they're doing just fine.
So, you know, so we'll keep you updated on those things. And as Courtney said, if anybody has any ideas, things that they think work, you know, we don't have all the answers. We're looking for answers. So, again, let us know. And if you have questions for Courtney, let us know. We'll check in with you. You know, it's early June. Figure sometime in July we'll talk camps and recruiting and summers and things like that.
Sounds great.
And we could also talk about the newer additions to the staff who haven't been hired yet.
Yeah, totally. I think the people will be excited about them.
And in the meantime, congratulations to your three seniors on graduating, and wishing all the best to your three coaches who are leaving. And not to single anybody out, but let's single out Milena, because Milena's always been so special to me and to everybody here in the athletic department since day that you arrived. And so we will certainly miss her, and we'll miss all of them.
We sure will. I got some texts from our old team that it's a coach, how are you? So yeah, people know how important she is. And Milena, this one's for you.
So this was an extremely long episode of the Court Report, but we're glad you stuck with us to the end. And Coach, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And thanks again for listening. And thanks once again for your support of Princeton women's basketball.